Hello and welcome to Perspectives. Today we'll be discussing the important role that healthy food plays in our community. Before we begin, a reminder that you are always invited to be a part of Perspectives via phone and email. Give us a call here in Tallahassee at 414-1234. If you're outside of Tallahassee, call us at 1-800-926-8809. You can join us by email at perspectives@wfsu.org or find us on Twitter at WFSUPerspective. And so we're joined in the studio today by several people who are involved in the sustainable food movement here in Tallahassee. Tallahassee is a growing city, but we're having trouble getting quality food in a lot of our areas in the city. Today, we'll be discussing the important role that food plays in our community. We're joined by Sundiata. He's the director of the iGrow Youth Farms on Dunn Street and in the South City Youth Farms. Mm-hmm. Michelle is the executive director of the Frenchtown Heritage Marketplace. And Tessa is the recycling and sustainability manager in the Office of Resource Stewardship. Oh, Tessa. And Molly is the sustainable agriculture and food systems extension agent. And so welcome all of you here. Possibly the best way to get started here is, you know, I can say what all of your titles are, but I think that each of you might be able to give us a better idea of what role you really play in this initiative that I think is really growing here in Tallahassee. Can I start with you, Sundiata?
Sure. Well, my background is education. And when I was introduced to the food systems movement just a few years ago, I brought that educational experience in and I began working with a youth empowerment program right here in Frenchtown, the iGrow, whatever you like, urban agricultural program. So that's mostly my role in terms of the food movement. A few other things, composting. Youth education, but education is the primary focal point for my day-to-day activities. So working with young people, teaching them urban agricultural skills, entrepreneurial skills, things of that nature, just to get them to see that growing food is something that is becoming a high demand and that they need to position themselves in that movement or in this movement so that they can reap the benefits and rewards of the energy that's to come within this movement.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, tell me about some of your involvement.
Sure. I was probably 20 years ago waving the no GMO flag, so but only just a couple years involved in the local food community engagement mode of that, the what will be the Greater Frenchtown Marketplace and Heritage Hub. Hopefully by the end of this year, but definitely launched in 2016, is a way to provide healthy food access for residents in Frenchtown have low access to and availability of healthy food. Mm-hmm. There just aren't options except for the Frenchtown Farmers Market that was launched in 2011. By Frenchtown Neighborhood Improvement Association. 2014, we got it on a regular schedule every Saturday in the same spot so people could be sure of where it is and show up. And they've started to do that. People actually from all across the region come. Last year, we had vendors representing five counties in North Florida and South Georgia. So in addition to food access, it's providing economic diversity. In Tallahassee, we have basically state government and the university system, both of which are necessary. But there was an interest in diversifying the local economy. Local food can do that. And so the Frenchtown Marketplace is a way for people who maybe your grandmother taught you to can fruit. Maybe you grow food in your backyard and you have excess. So for a very low fee, $10, you can come and sell that, start to supplement your income, help to spread information about how local food is grown and why it's important. So we see local food in a broader sense, in a higher level sense, as a way to build community resiliency. And I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk more about that.
Definitely. Molly, tell me a little bit about your involvement.
Sure. So with Extension, it's a partnership between the county and the state, and we offer educational programming that's scientifically based. And so my part as the sustainable agriculture extension agent is I concentrate my program efforts on sustainable agriculture, and I'm involved with the seed library. So with that, you can actually check out seeds. And so I've worked with the library in doing the brochure, and also I do different programming on soils. So we talk about how to manage soil correctly and the importance of soil. And so I do youth events and different events with adults, and just in learning about why soil is important. So.
Well, and Tessa, same question to you. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so at the Office of Sustainability in Leon County, we are in charge of developing a variety of projects and initiatives that deal with lots of things like energy, transportation, water conservation, and food was our big concentration for this year. We had the Sustainable Communities Summit, Food for Us, in January, which was a great success and really got a lot of things, everyone, all the stakeholders to the table, got a lot of initiatives started. And so our office does, for example, we have a community garden program in which we give mini grants to people in the community that would like to start a garden either on their own property or on county property. And we are involved in a variety of other things, but food is definitely one of the biggest concentrations for us this year.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about, I guess, why people should care about this? You know, a lot of our listeners probably want to be good stewards for our community, but why is this an important part of doing that?
Absolutely. So I get a lot of times that people, when I say I work in sustainability, they say, oh, you do recycling. And there's a much broader vision in sustainability than recycling, or waste reduction is just a small part of that. So sustainability can really apply to pretty much everything in our lives, and food is a very big part of that. And so sustainability has three pillars, which are the economy, society, and the environment. And food is really important for us to take care of the environment with food, obviously, because if we don't treat the earth right, we're not going to produce as much, not be able to feed people, you know, hurt the environment in different ways. And it's important for society as far as equality. And then it's really important for the economy. So purchasing food locally not only helps the environment as far as transportation and sustainable food practices, but it puts money back into the local economy. And generally, you get a higher quality and higher nutrition food from local sources. So it hits all three of those things.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like all of you guys touched on sort of the idea that making these programs happen takes a little bit of community buy-in. We need people from the community to help out and to support these programs. Tell us, why is that important? You know, why can't you guys just make it happen?
Okay. Well, everything that we do is community-based. And, I mean, even when we get to the basic fundamentals of community gardening, you know, the first word there is community, and you go a little bit deeper into that word, there's unity. So when we talk about getting buy-in from the masses of the people, it's very important so that they know what's going on and they understand the various components of this system, and it helps us to be able to garner that energy and that momentum necessary to start local programs, to start, you know, community gardens, to start youth programs, to really push the Frenchtown Heritage Farmers Market along. So the community is very, very important. They're very vital. And without their buy-in, without their knowledge, and being able to bring people from the community to the table to discuss how they want things to look, how do they think, you know, programs should look, and who should be involved. This is an asset-based community development, ABCD. And when we invite local people to the community, to the table, it just helps form a stronger bond to all of the things and initiatives that we want to promote. So that community involvement is necessary.
Mm-hmm. And I think the challenges that we're facing as a global community are enormous. But the solutions that we can engage in are personal. And the more that we share those and connect those and provide opportunities for people to do something about the situation we find ourselves in, the greater those ideas spread and take hold. For instance, every dollar you spend at a chain grocery store, 85% of that, 85 cents of every dollar leaves the community. The food that you buy there probably traveled farther than you will in your lifetime. So by spending those food dollars locally, spending them from farmers that are based locally and care about the land, are stewards of the forests and the rivers and are building the soil, because our food health is really and our personal and planetary health is based in soil health. So I'd love to hear Molly talk more about that. But the more that we spend those dollars locally, not only do they continue to circulate in the local economy and benefit us in that way, but we are supporting the people who are taking care of the planet, and it gives us a longer time to stay here.
And I think when you see where your food's actually coming from, or you grow your own food, or you actually go see the farm where your food is growing, that connection with food makes you care more about what you're eating. So, you know, you might not like that broccoli that you got, you know, in a frozen package. But when you see that broccoli plant and you see how it's grown and you see the love and care and what it takes to grow that soil and build the organic matter and see an unhealthy plant versus a healthy plant and chop off the broccoli head and eat it fresh, then you kind of get it and you see why it's so important to care about where your food is coming from and care that it's not just coming all the way across from the other side of the country, I think.
Mm-hmm. And that really is the point, too, that every single one of us is involved in the food system, whether you do so consciously or not. So what we're saying with all these programs is think about it. Do so consciously. Mm-hmm. And when you do, you start to see how food is connected to absolutely every facet of life.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you guys so much for those first comments. We're going to take a break here in a quick minute, and then we'll be back to talk more about that. Anybody can give us a call and ask us questions about that at 414-1234 or outside of Tallahassee at 1-800-926-8809. Welcome back to Perspectives. We're talking about sustainable food here today. Anyone who might want to join our conversation, I invite you to do so by giving us a call at 414-1234. If you're outside of Tallahassee, call us at 1-800-926-8809, or you can email us at perspectives@wfsu.org. Right before the break there, we were talking about the importance that community has in supporting this movement. And Sundiata, you work at the iGrow Youth Farms. You've got two locations now, which I want to talk about. But one thing that you do there is really get youth involved in the whole process from growing to selling, am I right?
Correct. The youth program is pretty dynamic. It was started back in 2012 with one of our founders of the Tallahassee Food Network and iGrow Startup Coordinator, Nathan Ballantyne. And then when I came on board, I came in as a youth engagement coordinator, and that just kind of helped propel me into the role that I play today as director. And, the young folks are really, really picking up and grasping these concepts. And when you go deeper into agriculture, you really realize that it's not just about putting a seed in the ground and watching it grow. There's so many life lessons that come with you know, sowing seeds and then reaping the harvest. So the young people are just intrigued and interested in everything that's going on with the program and the various components of it. But one of the main things that we love to focus on is something Michelle just mentioned, the intergenerational component that we have and how we have programs and different events at our locations. And we have people from all walks of life, all backgrounds, all socioeconomic backgrounds, all ages, where people come to these gardens and these farms, and they just learn from each other. So it's not just the agricultural piece, but it's a social piece that takes place as well. So there's an exchange of information from all types of people that allow the community to benefit as a whole. And like I said, the young people especially are learning what it takes to navigate through life. You know, that's what it's really about. And something else that I meant to mention also in regards to your original question about community buy-in is that we focus on partnerships. So it's not just finding various people from the community to come sit at the table, but what do you do? What organization do you have? What organization are you a part of? And then we find ways to partner with those organizations. And that's been the key and the mantra for our organizations for quite some time is partnerships, partnerships, partnerships. That's how I know all of these wonderful, wonderful ladies here in the studio is through our partnerships with these various organizations. And that's the key to allowing us to be able to make the moves that we make and forge ahead in this food movement.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about the iGrowth Youth Farms, you know, for people who maybe aren't familiar with what you do there and how it works.
Right. Well, we have two locations, like you mentioned, one in Frenchtown on Dunn Street, 514 Dunn Street, and then a recent location on 510 Orange Avenue. And with the generous partnership and assistance from the city of Tallahassee, we've been able to, you know, jumpstart the farm over on the south side of town. So, again, partnerships, partnerships, partnerships. But these young people are learning various we have basically five components to our program. Production, administration, outreach and marketing, team development, and beautification. So what the young people do is that they rotate through each of those components, giving them a holistic picture and a holistic view of what it takes to run a farm. And not just the like you said, the running of the farm, but the administrative piece, entering data, keeping track of all of the numbers and the harvest data that we collect, volunteers, volunteer hours, youth leader hours. So we have a multitude of duties and skill sets that they pick up on while coming through the program. So we invite, you know, all people to the program, but we especially want, you know, middle school, high school age youth to come in and participate and become leaders in the program so that they can, you know, begin to teach folks in their community about growing food and why it's so important.
Mm-hmm. And what if I know a middle schooler or high schooler who might want to get involved? Where can I send them?
Well, you can send them to our work days. The Frenchtown site, where they're Monday and Friday from 2:30 to 5:30, and the Orange Avenue site, where they're Tuesday and Friday from 3 o'clock to 5:30. So they can just come down and we'll give them a short orientation and a tour of the site. After that, if they express interest by, you know, continuing to come and show that they enjoy what they're doing, we'll talk to them about, hey, you know, you can be a leader in our program. There's a little bit of money involved. And, you know, we try to provide incentive to get them to come and learn and participate in the program. So those are our hours and our days. You can also contact me at 850-778-1531. And if, you know, any interest from people in the community and folks who want to get their children involved, you know, please send them my way. We'll take care of them.
All right. Great. Mm-hmm. It looks like we've got a caller on our line here. So let's go ahead. It looks like Drew is on the line and wants to know what sorts of oppositions are faced. Drew, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and please ask your question for our panel.
Yeah, I was wondering what kind of opposition or setbacks this initiative was facing, either inside or outside the community you're trying to help.
Okay. Michelle, is that a question you think you might be able to answer?
Certainly. It's a daily question that we try to navigate. I think that there's a lot of consumer education that we need to engage in. That's another facet of community engagement. Is just helping people to understand the whys and the hows, provide opportunities for agency, that people can be leaders in these movements and why it's important. And that really is a task of both the nonprofit organizations that operate these community programs and the municipal agencies that support us. You know, people are resistant to change. So if you come in with a new idea, there's going to be some pushback to that. I think we're also battling some very valid historical political issues. You know, people have not always been treated well. People don't necessarily understand the operation of government or the whys that things happen or why they don't. Sometimes things are not always above board. So there are very real concerns that you have to address and let air. People are always questioning motives. I'm just trying to help is a hard sell to make. But you just have to keep showing up and doing what needs to be done. And eventually that changes. So the problem didn't happen overnight. The solutions aren't going to happen overnight. With the team that has been working on the establishment of the permanent marketplace in Frenchtown, it took probably 6 months of relationship building among that group for the trust to be founded to move forward. And it's, you know, the accomplishment I'm most proud of to date. So if there's another take you guys have on that.
I would just say as well, you know, there's a system in place that makes it easier for us in some ways to purchase food that has traveled 1,500 miles than it is to purchase food that's traveled 5. And so that's another thing that we're changing is, you know, the system is changeable for sure, but it's been this way for a while. And so it does, as Shelley said, take time to change it and to make it just as easy to buy from your local farmer than it is to buy things at a grocery store, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some statistics I was kind of catching on the internet last night about the victory gardens that people had during the, I believe it was the Second World War. And, you know, today, less than, 20% of your food comes from people's yards, from your own backyard gardens. During the days of the Victory Gardens, it was like, you know, higher than 80, close to 90% of people's food came from their own yards. So if we look at the time span between the Victory Garden era, World War II, and where we are now, that's not a whole lot of time. But with the introduction to big agriculture, and, you know, big agriculture has its ups and its downs, its good and its bads. But, you know, it's like Michelle said, it hadn't happened. It didn't take overnight. But with where we are now and the urgency of our food system, I think that it's imperative that people really, really start thinking really hard about growing their own food and supporting local farmers because, you know, transportation costs, fossil fuels, you know, when you get a tomato from the grocery store, any produce from the grocery store, you're not really paying for that food. You're paying for all of the costs that it took to get that food to the grocery store and to your dinner table. So when we educate people on those perspectives, then, you know, we can kind of – it'll hit home and it'll realize that, wow, that's a lot of money that I'm spending just to get a plate of food on my table where I can save so much money by growing my own food or supporting my local farmers. So, you know, growing your own food is like printing your own money. Ron Finley from L.A. said that. And I think that's something that we should resonate with us. People should really think about that. But it didn't take a long time for us to get to the point where we're not growing food. So it shouldn't take that much of a long time to get back to the point where we are growing food. We just have to educate people and bring people back into that fold of understanding.
In just a couple very short generations, we have gone from that situation, from growing food in your own backyard, from most people living on farms, to most people not knowing that food comes from the ground. And when you do know that, that's hard to fathom. But I cannot tell you how many people that I've come across, not just in Florida, in California, and that's where most of the food is coming from, that don't realize, the younger generations don't know that broccoli grows in the ground, don't know that carrots grow in the ground. And so There's a very distinct separation that has happened in a very short time. And that is also a literal sense for the community buy-in question. Most of the local food initiatives that are happening by nonprofits, that are happening by community members who are giving of their time for free because there isn't money. And so you can support it financially if it's interesting to you. You can also support it verbally because it's community voice, telling people, telling the people in positions with great ideas like Molly and Tessa that this is what we want. These are the kinds of things that we need to happen, and then our municipal governments can move on them. So in a very literal sense, it's your money and your voice that will change the system.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for the answer to that great question, and thank you, Drew, for that question. It looks like we've got another caller on the line here who would like to ask a question. Millie, are you there on the line for us?
I am here.
Hi, Millie. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you for taking my call. I don't really have a question. I have a comment. Thank you for bringing this to the air. It is such an important issue. There's so many people who don't realize where their food comes, as your guest speaker said. And this is not just a local issue, but a global issue. You know, locally in our country, we have a health crisis going on. Globally, we have a planet crisis going on. And we're all asking, what can we do? What can I do? What can I do? And what we can do is eat locally, you know, and we don't have to wait for a health crisis. You know, we can do it before we get that diagnosis and people turn over a new leaf and go, oh, my God, you know. And there's so many stories out there how people have turned around major diseases by, you know, eating wholesome local food. So Thank you for bringing it to the air.
Yes, definitely, Millie. Thanks so much for your comment. We really appreciate it. Michelle, I saw you were giving a little thumbs up there when she was saying, what can we do? And she said one thing you can do is to eat locally. What else can people do? People who maybe they don't have enough room for a big garden in their backyard, or you know, maybe they have time constraints. What are small steps that people can take to really support this and make an impact?
Maybe Tessa wants to talk about community gardens.
Yeah, so the community garden program was started to really facilitate this kind of thing. So any member of the community, Leon County, can apply for this, these mini grants. And if you don't have your own land, you can apply to have it on designated county land, as well as, you know, any stakeholder garden, so and any other land that you might have, whether that be at a church or whether that be in someone else's yard or whether that be, you know, wherever you'd like. But that's really meant to kind of kickstart people that might not know where to start. And part of our application process is getting Molly, for example, at Extension Office to come out and do a site visit at wherever the person would like to start the garden and talk them through it, educate them. So, you know, to say, you know, even if they know nothing about gardening, and they really love the idea, you know, we can give some financial support as well as educational support. And I think the two together are really key to make sure that the garden itself is sustainable and sustained over time. And then it, you know, really makes a lasting impact on the local community.
Tell me more about that application process. So are you saying this is an application for an individual person? Like, I want to have a garden and I found this land that I don't own, but I want to have a garden there? Or is it a process where I think community gardening is great and I want to start a community garden where lots of people can come?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So I should have been more clear. I apologize. So it's an application that individuals, and the minimum is 8 people that agree to join in on this. And, you know, there's a primary contact, but yeah, there's a minimum of 8 people so that we can ensure that it's sustainable, but that we want it to be a community thing. And as I was saying before, gardens are wonderful at sustainability because it's great for the environment, it's great for the economy, it's great for society. I mean, one of the happiest, you know, times is when I'm working in the garden and, you know, building that relationship with your neighbors or other people that are, you know, digging holes in the dirt alongside you. And so it's a really wonderful asset to communities, and lots of really wonderful things come out of it.
Mm-hmm. And what can people do, let's say I wanted to do that, how can I find a space, or how can I find an already present community garden that has space for me?
That's a really good question. So on our website, growinggreen.org, we have the application and all of our information, and we're in the process now of kind of consolidating all of the gardens that we have into a list so we can get community members talking to each other, and so people can get involved in community gardens if they don't want to just start their own. But also there's county land that has been designated as possible places for community gardens, and so that's an option as well. Mm-hmm. And but it can go anywhere that is approved.
Schools too.
Yeah.
So schools can apply.
Schools are a very thank you, Molly, mm-hmm. for reminding me. Yeah, schools are one of the biggest portion of our applications, and we are in 100% support of that because it's a great component, not only in the biology classroom but in the math classroom. You can really connect a lot of stuff that they're learning in school to the garden, and as well as Michelle was saying, that showing kids that carrots and broccoli come from the ground and how they come from the ground. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, that's wonderful.
And there are DeMayan Gardens, another nonprofit in the area who is responsible for a lot of the garden installations at schools. These organizations always need volunteers. iGrow welcomes anybody to walk up and start helping. If actually gardening is not your thing, but eating is, you can choose to eat at restaurants that source mm-hmm. locally. You can, if you like cooking, you can buy your produce from the farmer's market. Because as the caller was saying, we do have a health crisis. I'll talk about it later.
Yeah, let me just interrupt you there, and we'll get that back to that right after our quick break here. Welcome back to Perspectives. If we're talking today about sustainable food here in Tallahassee and our greater community, if you'd like to join our conversation, I invite you to do so by giving us a call at 414-1234. Or if you are outside of Tallahassee, give us a call at 1-800-926-8809. You can also send us a question in an email at perspectives@wfsu.org, or find us on Twitter at WFSU Perspective. So right before the break there, Michelle, you were just about to talk a little bit more about community gardening and how that can play an important role, and also the other things that people can do to help to support this food movement. You were talking about going shopping at farmers markets if you like to cook as a way to support this food movement, or shopping at or eating at farm-to-table restaurants. Let me let you finish that thought a little
sure.
bit there.
and we do have quite a few restaurants in the area that source locally. You would be surprised. There's more than a dozen. And even if your favorite restaurant doesn't, ask. You know, it's about using your voice and demonstrating to the proprietors that that's the kind of thing that you want and would reward with money because that's what really makes the change in that regard. People are in it for business. So make it the business of sourcing local food, and that system will change because, as Tessa mentioned, right now it's more difficult to get food grown down the street than it is grown across the country, which is a little counterintuitive, but it's going to take us saying what we want to do that. And the reason that's important, I was mentioning the caller's point about health. We do have a health crisis, and it is significant for all races and socioeconomic levels. However, our communities of color have deep health disparities, dying of diet-related diseases at a much higher rate. But it's everybody's problem. And so when food is cheap, the costs come in other places. So we're paying those in healthcare costs. We're paying those in time off of work from illness. That is a direct result of the low nutrient content of our food that is produced industrially. When food is grown in a sustainable way locally, Once it's picked, it starts losing nutrients. If it was picked the day you bought it, you're getting the best that that tomato or okra or cucumber has to offer. You know, education will tell you that you need 5 servings a day. But it's not just 5 servings. The nutrient content of industrially produced food is much lower than food produced sustainably. So if you're buying locally, you're eating better, you're feeling better. I'm trying to remember where I was going with that.
So it sounds like you're saying basically that not only is using sustainable food good for building community, making sure people have access to food, but also just for you personally, it builds up the health of your community and yourself.
I do remember 2013, University of London, first ever study. This is also counterintuitive that we never had research that says this before that, but it was the first research to link health risks with consumption of vegetables. And so if you get 5 to 7 vegetables, your risk of dying by any cause goes down by 42%. That is significant. And so Frenchtown Market, for instance, it has centralized EBT access. It's the only market to do so. And because it has centralized EBT access, it also has a program provided through Florida Organic Growers that doubles SNAP dollars, formerly food stamps. It doubles SNAP dollars for the purchase of fresh produce. So a lot of times the argument is, and it shouldn't be, this is also a system situation, but purchasing fruits and vegetables is expensive. If you do that, people can do that who get SNAP benefits, can do that at the Frenchtown Market and get twice that what they could at Walmart or Publix or anywhere, and nowhere else can do that for you. And so it really is stretching the family food budget on food that will improve your health. And it's a unique thing that this market offers.
Mm-hmm. Jump right in.
If you don't mind, yeah. What's interesting about the SNAP aspect of this whole situation is that there's $72 million, I believe, that's being spent in either, I think, Tallahassee or Leon County in regards to, food stamps. And that's an important number that local food producers and local markets can capture. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I remember the headache that it was for our organization, for the Frenchtown Heritage Market, to get access to be able to accept EBT and SNAP benefits.
Process.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years. You know, that's a long time. But, you know, thank goodness we were able to get there. But that number alone should really, really, you know, spark interest in people's minds that there's so much money that we can capture. I know it's not just about the money, but it's about good health. But, you know, finance is important in this whole process. So,
and you can do both things at the same time.
Right, absolutely.
You can capture the money, and it is, and at least the 2012 are the numbers that I have, but it is $60 million mm-hmm. spent in Leon County through SNAP benefits. Most of that gets spent at chain stores and leaves our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it also would be a significant boon to the farmers in our area. A tiny 5% of that would mean that farmers stay in business and get to forward this movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we can create jobs, you know, just from those that SNAP money alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so. Well, and something about the Frenchtown Market, as I understand, is it helps to take care of a problem, which is a food desert in Frenchtown. So a food desert is a place where somebody might not have easy access to fresh fruits and vegetables within walking distance of mm-hmm. where they live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a thing that I know in that neighborhood where there are some more low-income people, probably mm-hmm. a lot of people who use SNAP or, as you said, Michelle, those are food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
People who use that now have the ability to get access to that food at the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a buy one, get one free. They have it Publix. You can swipe your card for $20 and you get $40 to spend. And nowhere else between Jacksonville and Pensacola can do that. So it's a significant interest. Mm-hmm. The other things that you can do if none of this appeals to you or only some of those things are that I think that our extension agency is the extension office is an amazing resource that we really need to take more notice of.
Yeah, they call it the best kept secret.
It is. Let's let it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can come to the extension office or call with any of your questions. We do natural resources, horticulture, agriculture, forestry. Most people have heard of 4-H programming. So there's mm-hmm. tons of different youth activities. We offer workshops on composting and how to garden and seed ID and tree ID, and there's a Master Gardener program. And so if you call with any of your questions, there will be somebody that I think can answer it. And so it's definitely kind of underutilized in a really good program that we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I wanted to ask you more about the seed program that you mentioned back at the beginning of the show. You were talking about that the Extension office is involved in that program mm-hmm. That lets people check seeds out from the library, right?
That's right. Starting August 8th, it's very popular, so you want to get there fast. We started it in spring and sold out real fast. But starting August 8th, we're offering the fall vegetable varieties. So you can go to any of the 7 library locations around Leon County. And as long as you're a Leon County resident and you have a library card, you can come and check out up to 3 seed packets per month. That's a little it'll run out pretty fast. But we're having an opening event on August 8th at the Lake Jackson Community Center. We'll have different booths about the importance of composting and just answering your gardening questions, and you can check out seeds. So come on down, and we'll have broccoli, kale. I worked with Louise Devine from Turkey Hill Farm, helped me to pick out the different seed varieties. So the arugula is actually from Turkey Hill Farm, and the other seeds are from kind of the smaller kind of heirloom varieties. They're all open pollinated. So if you saved your seed, it should go true to form. So if you have squash and you have zucchini and they cross pollinate, you might get some weird squash zucchini. But things like tomatoes, they are self pollinating. So if you saved your seed, then you'll actually get what you started with. So we want to start talking about that with a seed library and how you can start to grow plants that'll have local resilience if you save your seed from your strongest plant. So the seed library kind of feeds into that, where you get free seed and you can actually keep growing plants and recycle through.
And they don't make you bring them back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to point out. Usually, when we say check out, there's a due date, but for seeds, that's a thing you get to keep. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that you were mentioning fall vegetables. You know, I think a lot of people think of this spring, summertime as the time when you garden. That's when you grow things. And that's when you go to the farmer's market. That's when you get your fresh fruit. But you're saying fall is a new growing season.
That's right. In Florida, you can basically grow year-round, which is bad news sometimes for farmers who never get a break. You want to, for fall, if you start seeding in August, you'll be able to have vegetables that'll last all through the winter. So, and kale and collards are very tough. You might want to use a sheet or a frost cloth during those coldest nights. But we in Florida are very lucky, I think, that we can grow so much food year round. So in fall, you can still grow, get one last squash, in, or one last tomato even before the frost comes. But we're lucky in that regard. Up north, it's a lot harder. You have a lot shorter growing season. But
mm-hmm. Where can people go? I mean, is that information that the Extension office can provide about seasonally what mm-hmm. I should be planting in my garden?
Yeah, that we have growing planting calendars. Even Full Earth Farm in Quincy developed one locally. So we have that available. And I do a little Grow Healthy, Eat Healthy workshops where I bring things like that and talk about when to plant, what to plant, what to seed indoors, what to start directly in your garden, how to do frost protection, and how to start a compost and recycle that nutrients and build the soil. So, yes, you can come to the Extension office with all those questions and attend workshops and learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about, you were mentioning the idea of saving seeds, and that's something that I think of, like, my grandma used to save seeds, and I don't do that much anymore. But why is that an important thing to do? Why is that something you want to encourage?
Well, first, if you save your seed, so if you grow a plant, you don't really realize this, but even all plants will eventually go to seed. Like, it's called bolting, where they come out, and the flower stalk comes out. And if you harvest that seed and you keep it in your refrigerator, dry it out, do the proper steps to take care of it, then you can just feed your family with that same plant. And then you save seed from your strongest plant. And so over time, it's going to build that resilience to our pest and disease pressure in Florida, our high humidity. You'll be able to grow the strongest plant and develop different varieties. And, you know, if say this one plant was resistant to this pest more, then you save that seed. And over time, you can have a lot more diversity. So you can, if you go to the store and you buy just a single plant, you know, you're probably going to be pretty limited with the different varieties that you're going to have. But with seeds, it's amazing. You can look at local seed sources or seed catalogs, and there's hundreds and hundreds of choices and different colors that you can't find anywhere else. And you save seed, you learn to garden. It kind of develops community and just good self-reliance skills that you can learn.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It looks like we've got a couple more callers here with some questions for us. Let's go to our caller on line one. Lou, welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I'm calling because I work with Grace Mission. We're at the corner of Bruno and Brevard in Frenchtown, and we have a sustainable garden just on the back of our lot. So you don't really even need a garden soil. We built raised beds, but we're the largest USDA certified soup kitchen in the county, and we use that garden to supplement fresh vegetables and fresh herbs with the canned and frozen products that we get from the USDA and from Second Harvest. And then we have after school programs, and we use that as an object lesson with our children. We have a very high impact after school program, and our sustainable garden is kind of a holistic example for the kids about respect for nature and for the land and for how great it is to eat healthy food. And so it is amazing what you can do. We have a very small little concrete lot that's where we park our van and our buses, our school buses, and we built a garden back there that's, done great things in the last 2 years, and also has taught a lot of the adults that come to our mission for the ministry and services we have. We have some of our guys who wound up learning about produce and gardening and wound up working at grocery stores in the produce department through some of the skills that they learned there. So a garden can be an all-around great thing, as we've learned at Grace Mission.
Well, great, Lou. Thanks so much for your comment. And it sounds like that is sort of what you've been talking about, Sundiata, is that gardening can teach you important life skills that you could go on to use for the rest of your life or in your job. And that's something that you're teaching kids there at the youth farm.
Absolutely. Hey, Lou, this is Sundiata. How you doing?
How are you?
I'm good.
Our neighbor down the street.
Yeah, we help supply compost to Grace Mission. So
yes,
a lot
exactly.
of connections here throughout the community and the city.
Well, our main gardener has been transferred with her job and is going to be leaving us in September. And so if any of your listeners want to volunteer to come garden with us at Grace Mission, we'd love to hear from them.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, so what Lou is talking about, you know, those skills and life lessons that people are gaining just from working and volunteering in the garden is crucial. And I'm not a super religious person, but when you go into the Bible, the entire Bible is full of agricultural allegory. So those lessons that are being taught in Scripture are coming directly from the farm. They're coming directly from the field. So these are things that if people really, really want to get to know what, you know, religious Scripture means and those types of things, and, you know, reaping what you sow, harvesting, tending for plants and all those types of things, you know, these are life skills that the young people are learning at iGrow. And I don't when I talk to them and teach them, I don't bring in the whole religious component, but I just, you know, try to get them to understand the actual skill that's being learned and being taught. And they end up, you know, coming to understand it. So what Lou is doing is important. You can ride by Grace Mission certain days of the week, and you'll see people outside lined up for the soup kitchen and other folks volunteering on the weekends. And it's just partners like her that make this movement what it is and provide it with so much energy and power. And like she said, they don't have any yard space behind their building. It's concrete, you know, so you can get lumber and you can build a raised bed on concrete, or you can just put a bunch of compost on the ground on concrete and grow food. So many different ways to do it, but we appreciate her call and the work that she puts in.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that wraps us up today. Thank you guys all for joining us on Perspectives, and thank you to all of our callers who joined us today. I really appreciate this conversation. Taylor Cox is running our technology back there, and we've got Lydell Rawls answering our phones. Please join us next week on Perspectives when Tom Flanagan will be back here as usual, taking your questions and discussing important community matters.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.